IT transformation calls for true collaboration between cross-functional teams, from leaders to developers. Stop reacting to change and start leading transformation. Visit BoozAllen.com/Federal News Radio.
In its first year and a half, the Trump administration has lost a higher percentage of top advisors than any administration in recent memory. More than an academic or political curiosity, it can affect policymaking effectiveness down to the agency level. We get the numbers from Katie Dunn-Tenpas, non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. Katie, good to have you back.
Oh, thanks very much for inviting me.
All right, your latest chart shows a big percentage of turnover, and let's go over some of the numbers. What is that percentage, and how does it compare to Obama, Bush 2, and Clinton?
Okay. Well, I have a subsample. I have a larger sample that I released in January that showed that President Trump's turnover was record-setting. It was off the charts. It was more than triple Obama. And I decided to take a subsample of that group of staffers, and look at the very most senior level of staff members. So most of these individuals have the title of assistant to the president. And what I found with President Trump is that in just 18 months, he has lost 75%. Now, granted, it's a small sample size of 12, but he has lost 75% of the very most senior people in his executive office of the president. And that compares rather unfavorably to his predecessors. President Obama, at the end of a full 2 years, I don't have the 18-month mark, but I can tell you after 2 full years, President Obama only had 41% turnover amongst his top tier. In the first year, he only had 8% turnover in that top tier, whereas President Trump had 50%. So half of his most senior staff people left in that first year. More strikingly is the comparison to President George W. Bush, who after 2 full years, only had 17% turnover. He didn't lose anybody in the first year, and in the second year, he just lost 2 individuals at that very most senior level. So what it demonstrates is there's, as people suspect, there's a great deal of sort of disruption that occurs because of that. It's very difficult to implement the president's agenda because you have so much turnover. You have to understand that when senior-level people leave, they often take the junior people who came with them. So it's not just one individual leaving. Usually there's a ripple effect, and it's probably 5 or 6 people that are leaving from relatively small offices within the White House. It requires the Office of Personnel to hire new people, to train them, to bring them up to speed. And so all of this is highly disruptive to President Trump's agenda, and I think to the federal government more broadly, the people in the agencies and the departments, because it's hard to – you need strong leadership at the top in order to understand what your agenda is and how to implement it and things like that. And when you have so much turnover, it makes it difficult for people at the agencies and executive branch departments.
Sure. And you mentioned Mark Short, who is the most recent departure just a couple of weeks ago. And his departure didn't come because of some tweet or because of some public controversy. He just quietly left. And you saw some meaning in that. Mark Short, we should point out, was the liaison with Congress, correct?
Yeah. The director of legislative affairs, yes. Of the 9 people who have left from the Tier 1, only 2 of them have resigned voluntarily. One is Justin Clark, who moved to a different position, and then Mark Short, who's leaving the White House. All of the other individuals have been sort of vilified in tweets, somehow have received bad press, and have left on bad terms. The Mark Short departure, to me, was more telling in the sense that the 18-month point is really, when I've interviewed former White House staff members, they tell me that 18 months is the point where they actually feel like they know what they're doing day to day, that the learning curve is so steep when you enter the White House that it really does take almost 18 months to really get everything down and to be able to work effectively. It's also the case that Mark Short has been credited with not only the passage of tax reform last December, but also he's managed to maintain a reservoir of support for the president within Congress. And that's quite something given sort of, the various tweets and sort of the unpredictable behavior of President Trump. Somehow Mark Short has not only managed to dodge the bullets from President Trump, but he's also managed to hang on to support in Congress. And so his departure to me is more telling. It suggests that people are really burned out. It suggests that, maybe he just needed to get out of, get out of the White House and take a job that's a little bit calmer. It's also the case that President Trump openly states that there basically is no legislative agenda, that now all he's really focused on is the midterm elections. So I think when you say something like that as a president, basically what you're saying is that individual, that office is marginalized because they don't really have a legislative agenda. That's quite shocking. In other administrations, typically what you'd see is they would have plans, long-term plans, to figure out, okay, we're going to introduce this particular bill in September, we're going to introduce this one in October, we're going to do this. You know, they had sort of long-term plans in order to pass their legislative agenda and to get their goals done. President Trump just seems to float from one issue to the next. And I imagine if you're head of legislative affairs, that's a very frustrating position to be in.
We're speaking with Katie Dunn-Tempest, non-resident senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. So legislative affairs is more than just an exercise in lawmaking. I mean, this affects almost every area of policy affecting every agency.
Absolutely.
Is often expressed in legislative proposals.
Sure, in the budget, you could include that as well. He's highly involved in that as well, which affects all of the agencies and the executive branch departments, too.
How does this affect, or can we infer how this might affect those at the cabinet level, which are not quite as close as the direct White House reports, but nevertheless, you know, interact with those people for, you know, what should I do about this policy? What should I do here with this agency? What is it you want me to do?
Right. I mean, it creates a lot of instability and unpredictability day to day. And you don't know who you should be speaking with at the White House because that person is on their way out. In the case of Mark Short, they have promoted Shahira Knight to that position. She was on the National Economic Council, and she comes from a congressional Capitol Hill background and is highly respected. So in that respect, that's actually one of the most seamless transitions that I have seen within the Trump White House, where somebody's departed and they actually have somebody in the wings that is highly respected. Typically what happens is somebody sort of gets, you know, resigns under pressure. It's last minute. It's surprising to everybody. You can take Rob Porter as an example. And then it takes a while for them to find somebody to take that job. Sometimes they promote from within, and other times they bring people from the private sector in. But it's best, the example of Mark Short and having somebody who kind of overlapped with him a bit so he could sort of show her the ropes and then to take the position is best for the White House, and it's best for the executive department and agencies because it provides more stability.
And given a, you know, less mercurial president, which I guess every single one has been, you might fairly say, without passing judgment on who's correct policy-wise,
right,
but it's safe to say that the Trump administration is a little bit more chaotic perhaps than the others.
Right.
What's it like working at those types of levels in the first place when things are normal? My understanding is that the hours are almost unlimited. And it's pretty hard to derive satisfaction in saying, hey, I accomplished this at the end of a week or a month or even a year.
Right. You know, I would say I've done a lot of interviews and oral histories where I've talked to former White House staff officials who say that they would say goodnight to their children on Sunday night and say, I'll see you Friday night. Because literally every night during the week they were working so late, they left in the morning and didn't come home until after their children were asleep. These jobs are highly stressful. They're taxing even under the best of circumstances. And so I think that part of the reason that my data shows such a high rate of turnover is because it's difficult for people to sustain the schedule. You have to remember that many of them were on the campaign before. So they're looking at maybe 3 years, going on 3 years of probably very high stress, not a lot of sleep, and extraordinary hours. So as you suggest, I think that working in this particular White House has to be exponentially more difficult than it was for others. And having said that, it's always a very difficult job. What I have typically seen in the past is that there's a lot of turnover, a lot of departures after the midterm elections. So in other administrations, you would see people leaving in November of the second year. And that's a natural time to leave. A lot of people are financially stressed. They need to be making more money in the private sector. They're simply exhausted. And so that makes sense. But the fact that there were so many departures in year one, I was at 34%. Right now, I'm up to, I believe, 57% departure. This is a broader sample of senior staff where I can compare it going all the way back to Reagan. And it's off the charts, and I guess I shouldn't be surprised given sort of the chaotic nature and the mercurial nature of President Trump. It's a new world.
Yeah, and it's still revolving. Katie Dunn-Tempest is non-resident senior fellow in governance studies at the Brookings Institution. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Find a link to more information, her essay on this, in the charts, and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. Subscribe to all of our interviews at iTunes or Podcast One.